Hello, Malcolm here, and welcome to the second class in our mini-series called Even the Darkness, taken from Psalm 139. Sometimes we feel like we're in the darkness. Is God with us in the darkness? We're talking about mental health challenges, emotional well-being, and spirituality. How do we process this ourselves when we're going through these difficult times? And how can we help one another? How can we support one another in a healthy, appropriate way when our emotional well-being is threatened or those around us is, or our mental health is not as we would wish it to be? Last time we had a class, an interview with Jim Pickett. I hope that was helpful. This one is similar in that it's another interview, but it's with two very different people. It's with Sekai and Nossi, who are mental health nurses and members of our sister congregation in East London. I think you'll find it very helpful. I hope you do. There's a short version and a longer version of the interview. You can watch both or either, but I hope you find it helpful. And as you listen to what Nossi and Sekai have to say, ask yourself the question, what is God bringing to your attention here, either for yourself or for other people around you? Without further ado, let me hand you over to the interview with Sekai and Nossi.
So my name is Mirogute, as you know, or Sekai. I am a mental health nurse. My background in my profession, I've been in mental health for the past 20 years. Throughout this period, I worked in prison. In prison, I worked with inmates that abuse substances, so part of the healthcare, but focusing on the drug and alcohol. Currently, I work for a charitable organization called Social Interest Group. I am the clinical lead, the group clinical lead. The charity works with people with mental illness, providing supported living. About 8 years ago, while we were in the North sector, North and I, we, as mental health practitioner, we observed people with mental illness. I mean, as practitioner, sometimes just a brief interaction with somebody, we can tell. So we approached leadership and requested if we could start with a workshop to raise mental health, because all these people with mental illness, some of them didn't talk about it, some of them would see them not coming to church. So we did that in the North, and just held a workshop, raising awareness, signposting, and it really changed things. From that workshop, people opened up. So people started approaching us on an individual basis. And actually, some of the people, I'm still in touch with them in the North. While I'm in the East, they still contact me. So people started approaching us for help for loved ones. So we've been doing that since. So when we moved into the East, we carried on.
Yeah, thank you, Malcolm. Sekai and I actually trained together at Middlesex University. This is where she met me, and this is how I became a disciple, because she reached out to me, which I'm very grateful for, because my life was really transformed, and I thank God for that. So we both qualified the same year in 2003. I went on to work with what we call forensic nursing, which is like a specialist. These are people who would otherwise be in prison, but have committed, people who have committed crimes, but have gone on to, because of their mental health issues, went on to work as with the compliance team, who work very closely with the CQC, who make sure that people in hospitals are looked after properly or adequately. So I did that for 2.5 years. I've gone back now to back to forensics, and this time I am a modern matron, and I look after 4 wards, for people who are really ill and for people who are ready to be discharged as well. So that's me in a nutshell. Thank you, Malcolm.
There's a bit of a stigma of saying I have a significant emotional health issue or a significant mental health issue. I don't really want to talk about it, or I don't want to face it. And sometimes I think that's because there's an assumption, not everybody, but at least for some people, that, well, if I was doing better spiritually, I wouldn't be having these problems. And I wonder how you process that. How do you think about that?
People with mental health normally do not want to come forward to say, I suffer from this, which is quite sad, because when we are diabetic, we are quick to say to people, you know what, I need a cup of tea immediately after church because my blood sugars are low. But we don't do that with mental health because of these stigmas. And I think for me, it's about telling people it's okay. Your mind sometimes will suffer because of the stressors that we have in the world that we live in. For instance, if I take, for example, the pandemic, it has affected people differently. And differently in the sense that those who are predisposed to having mental health will suffer more than anybody else. And it is up to us, I think, as our children of God, to look after each other. But if I don't tell people that, you know what, sometimes I do really, really suffer from stress. And when that happens, I just want to hide. I just want, don't want to talk to people. I just want to be on my own. And when I'm like that, you know, I really don't want anyone around, but it's when I need people around. We don't say these things a lot. So people, we don't know how to help people. And because of this stigma, it doesn't help at all, that we are not open enough about it. And as a church, I think we need to find out from people. There is something that we always talk about that is called an advanced decision. This is for people who know that they've got a mental health problem or a mental health issue, and they make an advanced decision to say, if I'm like this, they make that decision when everything is going okay. So what they do is, okay, I have a mental health illness, and normally I'm very anxious, I do this, however it affects them, because mental health affects people differently. And so you make that, decision well in advance so that people know how to support you. And then there is not that stigma, because we know we are brothers and sisters in the church. We should be helping each other. We should be aware. We should be in each other's lives. And when we talk about being in each other's lives, these are some of the basic things that we should know. Is there something in our discipling relationships? Is there something that you need to tell me? Are you susceptible to a lot of stress more than anybody else? If you are in that situation, how can I help you? It helps to reduce that stigma. People know that, you know what, when I've got a headache, I take paracetamol. And when I take paracetamol, people are like, oh, are you okay? What's wrong with you? You just say, I've got a headache. And it's exactly, if we only accepted mental health like that as well, that sometimes our mind does lose it as well. So it's okay to have that.
Mental health illness is a reality. And we know, according to WHO statistics, that it affects one in three people who have mental illness. And various factors, as Nosi mentioned, some people are more susceptible than others. So because of that fact that it's an illness, I think the thing for people to understand that it's an illness just like any other illness. So whether you're a Christian or not, you'll be affected by mental illness. And also the fact that prayer, we don't say if somebody is, you know, has symptoms or their health is suffering, and maybe the symptoms of cancer are manifesting. We don't just say pray for those symptoms to go away. So the same with mental illness, that there is a point where professional help is needed. So the thing to emphasize would be prayer alone is not sufficient, and also to know that there is a point where professional help will be needed. And as a church, should be able to support, for people to be open. I think the critical thing, stigma, we know it exists with mental illness, but within the family of church, if people can be empowered to speak, and which was our aim, and which we've sort of managed really to achieve in some way, with people asking, we've had people calling us and say, I've got a colleague with this symptom. So opening up and asking and speaking is the important thing that we can do as brothers and sisters, to give people a safe environment so that they can speak about their mental illness. And the biggest thing within the family is probably confidentiality. People don't feel safe, and they think if they speak about their mental illness, if it's talked about, and because of the stigma in the society, they then feel very unsafe to speak about what they're feeling or the symptoms that they're experiencing. So it's the assurance that any of us is susceptible to mental illness, so we will be affected at some point, but is to seek help. And also the assurance that some mental illnesses, it's not like permanent. If it's addressed, like depression, it can be triggered by social situations or a situation somebody is in. And if that's addressed with counseling, at some point someone can stop taking medication. But we do know anyway, there are some, illnesses where, with mental illness, where you have to continue taking medication for the rest of your life, and still that's okay, because it's the same as diabetes and high blood pressure. Those people have to continue taking medication the rest of their life.
Sometimes people have an idea in their mind about what mental health is about. They'll have a film in mind, or perhaps a family member, and then everybody else sort of fits into that. But it's a very varied situation, isn't it, with different people as to what the issues are and how it manifests itself.
Yeah, I think that is the danger, because what we see on TV is not really 100% reality, because mental illness has the stigma is people, it's associated with violence, with anger, with all those aggression, but it's really not. Sometimes you just suffer inside and not actually be able to even wake up, not even able to to have the strength to wake up and just open your curtains and have something to eat. So it's very varied, and people should understand that it affects people very differently.
There was a fella, I forget the details, but somewhere in London, I think in the east of London, perhaps, who suffered from schizophrenia and killed somebody. And it was splashed across all the newspapers, of course. Yeah. And although the papers didn't exactly put it, or the media didn't exactly put it this way, but nonetheless, the sense was, oh, if someone's schizophrenic, I should be afraid of them. And this is something to be really afraid of. But that's putting two and two and making five.
I think that's the sad bit, because I have got a brother who suffers from schizophrenia myself, but very loving, very, very, he doesn't have any aggression. He doesn't. That is one thing that made me come into mental health to kind of think, what's going on? Because as a child, I didn't understand what was going on. I didn't understand. I just knew that he was weird and he would be picked on by other people. And you think, what's happening? What's wrong with him? But as a child, I knew. But because of that stigma, my parents never talked about it until, we grew up and we knew there was definitely something wrong with him. And for me, it was just learning that, it's okay to be different. It's okay not to be like other people. As long as you, you take medication, and as the guy has rightfully said, it's not everyone who takes medication for the rest of their lives. But unfortunately, my brother has, continues to take medication. And he's living a very thriving life in his own way. And he's not aggressive, he's not, but he's actually, schizophrenic, but he is living, it's not aggressive.
It's these isolated cases, like the one you mentioned, Malcolm, that really perpetuate the stigma. Situation has improved after this boxer, what was his name a few years ago? Bruno, is it Bruno?
Oh, Frank Bruno. Yeah.
Yes,
Frank.
When he came up in the open and talked about his depression after he was sectioned or something, it really helped. And a lot of people then started coming up, Beckham saying his OCD and everything. It sort of really helped dispelling the myth about mental illness.
So if let's say I'm talking to a member of the congregation, or if you were, to somebody who's really been having an unusually high level of disturbance in any area, depression, anxiety, OCD, or anything else that you would be aware of that I might not be. And they, it was going on, and it seems to be associated with this pandemic. Are there some things you might share with them, or some signposting you might do, or some ways you might talk to them as a fellow believer? For the average Christian like me, approaching somebody who's got these particular difficulties, are there some do's and don'ts maybe that you think would be really important to bear in mind?
Yes. what happens is that sometimes we don't know what somebody's really, really going through.
Yeah.
And for me, the most important thing is to find out exactly what's happening with the person, what it means for them. And then that talk, which is really non-judgmental, where you completely listen. Because normally what tends to happen with mental health, it raises our own anxieties within. And then when somebody's talking, we want to talk over them or say, oh, yeah, this happens to me. But sometimes all you need to do is to hear somebody, let them talk until you feel, they have reached where they want you. Because sometimes it's not about giving advice to people. Sometimes they just want a listening ear. So not to jump to conclusions, just to think, oh, it's because someone wants me to say this, or they want me to help them in this way. Sometimes it's about listening. And sometimes it's about, okay, what have you done? Ask them, okay, what is it that I can help you with? Find out from them, what do you want me to do? Sometimes they don't know. And when they say that, I don't know, because I feel really, really overwhelmed. Maybe this is when you can say, have you gone to your GP? I would consider you to go to your GP and tell them what you are, you're telling me. Are you eating well? Are you sleeping well? Those are the first things to ask someone. To ask them, do you think I can refer you to somebody who might help you? Because I don't have the answers. I don't know about what you're asking me, but I know somebody who might be able to help you.
Talking to a fellow Christian, the do's, I would say, what we sort of talked of in one workshop we had, was to focus on one day at a time. Really try to not plan ahead, think ahead, because anxiety usually grows when people start thinking widely or globally, or thinking ahead of a month or two. You then feel very anxious thinking what's going to happen. And even as you mentioned, that thinking of the new variants and everything, thinking too much on those things can actually make things worse, can make anxiety worse, get people more panicky as they try to figure out, sometimes worry on things that will not happen. The first port of call is the GP. And because of stigma, really people don't want to be seeing calling mental health department or going to a community alcohol, community mental health team. So just knowing that the first call, if you have any symptom, is the GP, to call your GP. So that sort of make people really, you know, comfortable if they are experiencing anything, knowing that you don't have to go to mental health team, you can go to your GP.
Where we come in as brothers and sisters to know each other deeply, and these are then when we go back to our creator, go back to what we know best in the Bible, and this has been in one another's lives. This is about checking on each other. Sister, I didn't see you on Zoom. How are you, brother? How are you feeling? Is there anything I can do? And if you know somebody really, really deeply, you would know that something is not really right. Something, and the world is slowly opening. Now people can go into each other's gardens or meet in the park. Then you can actually see, you know, face to face and see how are they dressed? You know, have they been eating? You know, have they just find out, because we're brothers and sisters and we should be looking after each other.
Sometimes people will give you, they'll give you a hint, but they won't tell you directly that there's something deeply wrong because they're not sure if it's safe yet to tell you. And so rather than saying, you know, I've been thinking about killing myself, they might just say, I've lost my appetite, or I haven't been sleeping well. And this has helped me to pay more attention to those simple things that people say, not to be too super suspicious. But on the other hand, if someone I know says, I haven't been sleeping well, rather than say, oh, that's unpleasant, that can't be nice. But perhaps to ask a supplementary question, I think it's part of what you might be saying, is to say, do you want to tell me more about that? Or is there something particularly on your mind at the moment? Something like that. Is that right? Am I on the right track?
Yeah, you're right. You're definitely on the right track. Listening to those hints is really important. And also, I mean, what you have said, that people won't tell you exactly what's happening. Because sometimes, when especially maybe on the onset, people actually don't know how to verbalize. Things will be happening and they don't know, like the onset of depression. It's just so difficult to know. The person will lose interest. They will lose motivation. So it can come across like someone saying, I'm struggling to pray. But if we then say, oh, you're not being spiritual, here's another scripture, it won't be helpful. It's just really then to probe more. Why are you struggling to pray? Right. And then they can then say, I just feel tired. I lose more. All those, you'll see the symptoms will start to unravel.
Under what circumstances might a Christian say, having heard something from another Christian that really worried them, under what circumstances might they, or how would they deal with that if they think that person's in danger? How would you sort of deal with that, do you think?
We keep confidentiality to extend. If there's risk to life, to yourself or to others, we'll break confidentiality. So that's acceptable within NHS. I work in a private organization. We'll make sure we let our clients or patients know that. So in a Christian environment, I mean, like the things would consider to really not keep, like if there's risk to life, someone is verbalizing serious suicidal ideas and they are talking clearly about ending their life, that would be very concerning. If somebody is symptoms are getting worse, so let's say especially like auditory hallucinations, they're hearing the voices that are clear, voices that are commanding in nature to them, and then they say, but please don't tell somebody, you are the only one I'm telling you about this. That would be concerning to me, because anything that's commanding, if the voices are telling them to do something, of course, on breaking confidentiality, I would tell the person will be told that what you have told me, because of this distressing nature, I won't be able to do to keep this. We have to do something about this. So in terms of mental health, if it's somebody not within service, I will support for them to get help. So support for them to refer them that they get help.
Anything that breaches any safety for anyone, whether the person who is telling you this in confidence, or the safety of somebody else they are talking about with threats of harm to themselves, threats of harm to other people, needs to be reported. That needs to be escalated because, as the guy said, there are command hallucinations and some people have gone on to act on them and it places everybody at risk. So those, if you, you know, serious threats to anyone or somebody's safety, then we have to escalate those things. We cannot keep things like that to ourselves because if then it's acted upon and we haven't said anything, we are accomplices as well in that.
Got it. Yeah. So as sake of argument, I'm talking to a member of the church and they say, I don't think I can carry on. I'm thinking of ending it all. I've got 3 bottles of paracetamol at home. I'm going to go home, drink a bottle of wine, take a boatload of paracetamol. I think that's what I'm going to do tonight, or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Then
yes.
Clearly that's one of those situations where I need to contact somebody. But where would I start?
Mm-hmm. You'll start, because I assume the person is not is with you at that particular time.
Let's say
but
so.
They're saying when they go home, they'll do this. I would keep them there while they're saying that. Nowadays, we're blessed. It's not like, 15 years ago when we didn't have any mobile phones. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you can actually text. Sometimes you just have to ring the crisis team, ring their GP. You don't necessarily have to ring like the police. It depends on what you are talking, this person is talking about. But like this one, because this is a safety issue, they are threatening to take their own life. And they are telling you they've got what we call active plans where somebody's going to do these things. Because they are with you, they are not going to be doing it there and there. I would go home with them. And this, again, we go back to what we know best. We go back to, can we pray with you? Can I go with you home? Can I take these away from you? Whatever you can say to prolong that. Whereas at the same time, if you've got your phone, you know, text a Sakai and saying, I've got a situation here. Would you be able to help me? Do we call the police? There will be somebody who would know exactly how to go about these things. Each region where people live, and I would suggest this to the leaders of our, find out what your mental health crisis team number is, because they work 24/7, 7 days a week. You can get somebody to come and help there and there. They can come and do assessments there and there on a person. And then you're saving yourself, you're saving that person. So it's very important to all of us know our crisis numbers where we live. It will save a life.
Actually, crisis team can, because I worked closely with them in the community, they can actually speak with the client there and then.
Also, there is the 111, isn't there? The 111 number that people can ring and say, I've got somebody here who is acting like this. There is so much help out there before.
And also it would actually probably sometimes it's cry for help. They actually don't want to take their life. So it goes back to probing. Sit them down, cup of tea, tell me what's happening. And then it will transpire, I have lost my job. I've even paid my bills. So they really don't want to kill themselves, but they were just crying for help. So you may actually then ending up talking and laughing. And then you can say, okay, are you going to throw away the pills? And they may say they want. Then from there, maybe you may then talk about referring to things like debt plan, because the issue that's making them is the debt they're in or whatever, then they can go there. If it's job, okay, can I help you with your CV? So they just utter that statement as crying for help.
It's often the case. Yes. So it sounds like a question, going back to the probing thing you mentioned there, but also earlier, one of you mentioned, there's an art, I suppose, or perhaps it's experience of probing without being aggressive, because right, you don't want to make them feel like they're having an interview or being under an inquisition, but you want to give them the opportunity to open up about what's going on. So I guess it's about a gentle and patient probing. Is that right?
That's right. With open questions.
Open questions.
What is happening? You keep quiet. So you when you say what's happening, it's abroad. You give them chance to talk. Other than as you're saying that, not being aggressive, what's happening, brother? Let's open the scriptures right now. Let's read what's happening. So it's, tell me, brother, what's happening? Can you tell me more? Can you explain more about what you have said? So that gives them space to talk. So probing really needs less talking on it or on the side of the prober, and more listening. Give the person the chance to answer questions.
Yeah, and to actually ask, when Sakai, can I ask, when you say this, is this what you mean? Make sure we know exactly. No assumptions. There's no room for assumptions here, because otherwise we give the wrong advice, completely the wrong advice. Mm-hmm. So if you think this is not really clear, you go back and say, okay, I heard you say, or I hear you say, can you just repeat? How does that look for you? Because for me, this is how it's looking like, but I might be wrong. Can you explain it from your point of view? Am I hearing right that you are saying you're going to take those pills when you get home? How many do you have? Where are they? You know, those open-ended questions where you don't give somebody just a room to say yes, no, because that is not helpful. Because I wouldn't know if somebody just says yes, no. So I need them to talk.
I suppose it's a kind of a deep love to be able to be silent with somebody is a really deep love because it's really quite sacrificial. Are there any particular scriptures in the Bible or passages in the Bible, examples of things that occurred in the Bible that you find particularly helpful in either helping other people to understand maybe that God is in this and God is with them in this and God loves them despite what they're feeling or going through? So either you might share with them all scriptures or passages from the Bible to help you with your heart and your attitude and your actions towards people who are struggling. Anything like that?
Yeah, for me, I think it's Romans 15, verse 13, which says, "May the God of hope," that word hope there, "may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace." Because when you have got that hope, you've got that peace. As you trust in Him so that you may overflow with the hope. Because all you want somebody is to have that deep hope, to overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. Because that's what you need in somebody, that hope. Because for somebody to keep coming or somebody to call you to say, "I'm feeling this way," there is a tiny little bit of hope there. So you want them to be overflowing with hope and filling them with, okay. And you ask them at that particular time, this is when it's very important, "Brother, I think what has helped me in the past, brother, is or sister, is praying, knowing that God doesn't judge me. I come to Him, He knows I am broken," because even Jesus wept. He wept when Lazarus died. You know, he was really, really aggrieved. And our souls will be aggrieved. If the Son of Man himself actually cried, we will cry at some point. We are not exempt. We live in this world. Even Jesus was here. He cried. He was so overwhelmed with grief when, you know, even when he was going to the cross. So we will have pain. And sometimes our souls will be so burdened. But Romans 15 really, really resonates with me. And I love it. Even for me, when I'm going through difficult times, just to know that, you know, the God of hope will heal me.
That's a really interesting insight there, Nossi, I'd never thought about, which is that the very fact you're having a conversation with somebody indicates there is even if it is only a small amount of hope, there is some hope. And so we're not starting from zero, we're starting from something, and prayerfully we can build on that. That's a really
Absolutely.
interesting thought. Thank you.
The story that encourages me, or that I use to encourage some people I've talked to, is the story of Joseph. What he went through and the years he spent in working, taken to a foreign country and being put in prison. And he, talking about hope, he remained hopeful. He sustained himself by, we don't know where he get the strength to carry on. So it's just to think of that hope that eventually things worked out for him. When the butler remembered him, they forgot him for so many years, but he remembered him in the end. And just to know that life has thrown a lot of things to people right now. People have lost jobs. Circumstances have changed drastically for many people. And we know in mental illness that when things are like this, the pressures are like this, people get depressed, because this is the condition that has really affected a lot of people. So with that, and just thinking of the story of Joseph, that eventually things worked out for them, and just to know that when things are dark like this, the light will be there, even when you start not seeing it, it's there at the end of the tunnel. My go-to scripture is Psalm 121. "I lift my eyes to the hills. That's where my help comes from." And I find that just really encouraging.
And Isaiah 41 verse 10 says, "Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed." So that all alone for me really, really helps me. "For I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." Just fills me with so much hope. And with so much faith, even when I sit down and help someone, I know that, you know what, God is always here with us, no matter what happens, whether we are broken or not broken, nothing ever surprises Him. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Gosh, those are great scriptures. I'm going to make sure I have those to hand. So just before we finish, is there anything we didn't talk about that you just like to make sure you want to mention? Anything else that's helpful?
I just wanted to add as well that organizations like I always call them the Good Samaritans. They're called the Samaritans, not the Good Samaritans. So it's always to give members this information as well, because they are really helpful. If people are really in a dark place, because as disciples, we can support each other to a certain extent. And sometimes, like if it's midnight, 2 a.m., and the thoughts are overwhelming, you may feel, oh, I can't call people this late. The Samaritans are always a go-to area, 24/7, and they are helpful. Another thing I want to mention as well, because I wouldn't finish this without talking what's dear to my heart, substance misuse, especially alcohol abuse, has gone up during this period. And as disciples, we are not immune, and you know we drink, we don't get drunk, but you find that alcohol intake has increased because of people being alone. And this is actually something that's very difficult for Christians to talk about, to admit that they've got an alcohol problem. So that's something to just, you know, be thinking about and talking to people in general, that, you know, if the intake has crept to the extent that you can't not have a drink daily, then it's going to bad places. It's really important to seek for help. We do know that among religious groups, it becomes really difficult, and sometimes people go, they then dip into dependency because they have not talked about it sooner.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we didn't get there, but that is a major contributor sometimes to emotional and mental health issues, and has a knock-on effect, right? It can make conditions much worse, or can bring on conditions. So we should do a whole other thing about addictions, actually, because there are so many. And you know, whether it's social media or alcohol, or there are different ways for us to satisfy that addictive part of so many of our natures.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. This has been brilliant. Well, a huge thank you to Nossi and Sekai for what they shared. What struck you? What stood out to you as might be helpful to you for your own issues or in helping other people? I'd like to know what you think. So drop me an email, malcolm@malcolmcox.org, or leave a comment anywhere you hear or see this recording. This is the second of our two classes. We will post more materials in the future, but that's it for now. If you have any suggestions about future classes on these topics, then do please let me know. Again, email me. And you'll find on various outlets, including my own website, some other materials which people have suggested to me that may be useful for other people. So if you go to my website, you'll see them. That's malcolmcox.org. Malcolmcox.org. There's a page there on mental health and emotional well-being, and you may find some useful things there. Well, thanks very much. Thanks again to Nossi. Thanks to Sekai. Hope this is helpful. We are in the darkness sometimes, but we are not alone in the darkness. We have God, and prayerfully, we also have each other. Till the next time, take care, and God bless.